The most profitable companies in the world have already announced your future forecast. It is a greenhouse world where weather extremes and mass casualties are normal. Yes, oil, gas, and coal multinationals plan to expand until we reach a hellscape way over 2 degrees hotter. They are telling us right out loud. A group of nonprofits are listening and taking notes. A global database led by the German environment group Urgewald began tracking world coal projects, but now we also have Google, the global oil and gas exit list. It tracks 900 companies responsible for 95% of oil and gas production. Our guest, Katrin Ganswit, is an energy finance researcher for Urgewald from Germany. Katrin Ganswit, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you. Hello.
Hi. Well, everybody loves a hidden conspiracy, but are the intentions of fossil fuel companies a secret?
No, I don't think they're a secret. They're in every annual report of every company you want to have a look at, basically. But what is maybe sometimes hard to see is the big picture. So what we're trying to do is really look at the full fossil fuel industry. As you said, we looked at the coal industry since 2017, and since last year we also compile the global oil and gas exit list. So like this, you have it in one database, all the actual production and actual plans of the oil and gas industry.
So just to be clear, you have a coal project, you have the gas and oil exit list, and then you just recently released your report before COP27. Tell us about that.
Yes, so because the COP is in the African continent and because the interest in fossil fuels from Africa never stopped and is even rising since we have the energy crisis in Europe around the Ukraine-Russia war, we had to look at Africa in general as a whole. And we used our research from our global oil and gas exit list and from our global coal exit list and extended it a bit even, and we had a look at all the companies who are expanding fossil fuel usage or fossil fuel resources on the African continent. We released the report during COP on November the 14th at a press conference there to tell directly to people who were at COP interested in the subject or also the ones who didn't want to hear it about how there's still colonization in Africa through energy exploitation.
Right, so that's the report. Who is financing fossil fuel expansion in Africa? It's available free from Urgewald and other sites. So France's company, the Total Energies, they're planning, investing, and building a lot of new fossil fuels in Africa. And as you say, it sounds a little like energy colonization. Is that what you see happening? And is this, are these new wells and all the projects really going to help Africans who need it the most?
Our report was supported by 36 African NGOs, and the term colonization, actually the term of we are the global north is using Africa as a petrol station, came from them. It was said also by Omar Amavi, who was at our press conference, who's leading the Stop EACOP campaign. And they were clear, our partners also, when we talked to them before we wanted to compile the report, and they state that also in the intro of the report, that fossil fuel resources who are now newly developed in Africa are mainly for the use of the global north. We can see that in different parts. We can see that just less than a third of the companies who are looking for new oil and gas resources in Africa are from African countries. Over 60% of the companies who are now developing new oil and gas resources are from outside of Africa. 90% of the new LNG capacity built in Africa is for export. Over 50% of the pipelines built in Africa are for export to Europe. So it's not there as a expansion of fossil fuels is not there to support the African continent, but to support the European or Asian countries who want to use the resources. And in Africa itself, many groups are demanding a change to full renewable energy on the African continent. They're stating again and again that this continent contributed the least to climate change, but still has 40% of the renewable potential of the globe. And what we can show also with our data is that the several LNG terminals, for example, plant on the continent, which cost about $30 billion. And at the same time, the International Energy Agency says $25 billion are necessary per year to make Africa renewable until 2030. So our report shows very clearly money and investments have to go into a totally different direction than they do now.
Going to the global look in the global oil and gas exit list, we find huge expansion plans leading to something called, quote, an IEA NZE overshoot. What is that?
Yes, our IEA net zero overshoot scenario is based on the net zero by 2050 report, the roadmap the IEA laid out last year, which should limit global warming to 1.5 degrees. The IEA is a very conservative organization. Nevertheless, banks, financial institutions, industry likes to listen to the IEA, and they really have come a long way that we can, even if their data is very, or their projections are very, over-optimistic, we still use it to show, basically to translate what we see in our lists, what that means according to the IEA net zero scenario. So we are looking at how many new oil and gas resources are currently developed and how many of them have been under development before January 2021, because everything which is under development since then is not in line according to the IEA net zero 2050 scenario. So they have, these companies have an overshoot. So we can very clearly, for example, say there are the top six companies with the highest IEA net zero overshoot. Three of them are majors, Exxon, Total, and Chevron, and then there are three national companies, Saudi Aramco, Qatar Energy, and ENOC.
You know, it's interesting. Most of the climate campaigns that I'm familiar with target the Western multinationals like ExxonMobil or Chevron, but it seems like we just don't know enough, and maybe we're a little afraid, to tackle the Middle East countries like Saudi Aramco and Qatar Energy and the Abu Dhabi National Oil Company. I wonder, are these major climate killers, who are planning on expanding the most, by the way, are they getting a pass from environmental activists and from governments?
I wouldn't say so, but obviously, it's very obvious that the more pressure you can do in societies where it's possible to speak at least to a certain average of freeness, where media can say what they want. So that's the one point. And the other question is, of course, who does a company get money from? So the more a company is nationalized and also gets national and public funds, the harder it is, of course, to campaign on that on a global scale. We were looking mainly at private financial institutions, so also our campaigning goes more like to the private capital, which is campaignable, so to say. So I wouldn't say there's a free pass, but on the one hand, it's a question of opportunity, and then there's, of course, the question of, like, just because there are other companies we maybe cannot tackle, which are maybe as bad as the ones in our own countries or in our whole region, it doesn't mean we don't still have the historical duty to campaign against those which are in front of our nose, so to say.
Well, Katrin, you live in Germany, a European country scrambling to find more fossil fuels after the failure of Russian supplies. Consumers all over the world demand their gas tanks be filled, their homes be heated, all the consumer goodies have to keep coming. Can we blame Middle Eastern monarchs for giving us what we want?
Not as long as we pay for it. Here in the German radio news, you hear more about how people are angry about soccer games in Qatar than they were about our chancellor and our head energy company in Germany going to Qatar asking for gas. So this doesn't add up. So in the end, it's the question, if we want to see leadership on how to do renewable energy transition and go away from fossil fuels, we have to do that in front of our doorstep first before we demand that only from others. It has to be both ways, always.
So Google, as we'll call it, reports 96% of upstream companies have expansion plans. What is an upstream business, and what does that say about the energy transition?
Upstream means basically the production of oil and gas, so production with conventional but also unconventional methods like fracking, tar sands, ultra-deep water drilling. And it says basically that the oil and gas producers don't have any plans to change their business model, and that none of them have a credible transition plan. if these companies would really want to transition, they should first stop to expand their operations. The old business model is you show how many reserves you develop, and according to that, you are rated. According to that, your share price is connected. So they didn't change any of that. They didn't understand yet. Either they didn't yet understand climate change or they don't care about it. And, I mean, we have seen that there were reports on growing numbers of fossil fuel lobbyists at each COP, basically, and we still don't see fossil fuels in the COP text as demanded, and it's phased down or phased out.
This is a climate emergency. Find out more on the blog, ecoshock.org. No sign up, just the latest info, free for all. Ecoshock.org.
You are listening to Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. Our guest is Katrin Gansvid, an energy researcher for the environment group Ergovald. Your specialty is coal. Our recent guest, Patrick Bond, told us Germany is searching for more coal, including a visit this year by German Chancellor Olaf Scholz, trying to find more coal. We thought Germany was getting out of that dirty power source. What's going on?
We're going out of the dirty power source, but first of all, the nitty-gritty details of the plan can change. But the other part of it is, of course, as long as coal plants are still running, you still need new coal to fuel it. The big problem of the fossil fuel resources are they're not abundant like wind and energy, but you still have to pick them up. And that's basically what is still happening in Germany. And there is big discussion, of course, on how much coal is actually really needed and if all the coal which is digged out shouldn't be left in the ground because we should stop using coal much earlier than 2030. But this is why we're still looking for new coal, because we still burn it.
Makes sense. Okay, so now Patrick Bond also spoke of gaping holes and illusions in the project to transition the South African coal mining industry into renewables. What have you heard about how that project is going?
Yeah, the South African coal industry, it's also twofold. You have, on the one hand, of course, the country being dependent, about 80% on coal energy, and about a third of the coal which is produced in South Africa is also exported to Asia, but of course also to Europe, and even more so now since we don't have or don't want to use Russian supplies anymore in Germany. And what we see there, what we hear from our partners in South Africa, is that a big problem is, of course, the Eskom, the national utility Eskom. They have a really bad track record on maintenance on the huge new coal projects, and still there's regular load shedding for several hours for South African people. There's a lot of loss in transport of energy. It's a lot of energy is used for the industry, and actually the real energy transition, it cannot happen in South Africa as long as a clear phase-out for coal isn't announced, and as long as also the energy ministry is still pursuing for the use of other fossil fuels as a transition, like gas, a so-called transition.
Before the COP, Ergovald, along with Stand.Earth and 40 partner NGOs, released the 2022 update for the Global Coal Exit List. First, please explain what an exit list is, and then how it can be used by researchers or campaigners.
Our global coal exit list should show the full coal industry. It was made because we saw that financial institutions are not aware of what a coal company is, even if they claim to want to divest from coal. On the other hand, it was also possible with such a list to check portfolios, for example, of your pension fund, or to do research on the real investments and financing of banks, and like that to support not only our own campaign, but also NGO campaigns. So we use the list. On the one hand, we distribute it to financial institutions to make good, impactful coal policies, and now with the goggle also oil and gas policies, and for our NGO colleagues to do impactful campaigns.
There has been a myth, even in environmental circles, that coal is winding down. It is a dirty sunset industry from a past century. It's headed for bankruptcy and shutdowns. And when you dig into 1,000 coal companies and their subsidiaries and their plans, is that what you find happening?
Also what we see is that the expansion of the industry is slowing down, especially the power plant expansion, because as said, as long as you burn coal, you need mines, continuous coal supply. But we definitely see a winding down of the expansion in specific countries, and we see a beginning or already implemented a coal phase out in different European countries. We also see a winding down of coal in the US. We, of course, see on the other side the rise of LNG, of fracking in the US. Yeah, so you always have to look at that as a whole. Yeah, on the whole fossil fuel industry, especially if you look at coal, you always have to ask if a company wants to phase out coal, is it replaced with gas or a country? This is also a question we actually had very early since we produce and distribute the global coal exit list, discussions with NGOs, but also with financial institutions are always, okay, what's next? What's coming after coal, basically? Also the subject of gas and not just winding down coal, but actually not replacing it with gas is there. And obviously you have differences when you look at the whole globe. As we know, there's still a lot of expansion plans, for example, in China, and in general, the most energy growth, of course, is in Asia.
Indonesia is right now building a huge coal plant as we speak, and of course they're a major miner and exporter of coal, so they haven't stopped. At the recent Egyptian COP, India called for a different language about coal. They continued to argue India should be allotted enough energy to develop, as Western countries did, but then they add this wrinkle. Why should developed countries discriminate against coal? I mean, Europe and America want to keep their gas. They call this methane fuel natural. Some even want to label it green. But India has to give up its staple energy source, which happens to be coal, they say. What do you think?
Yeah, in a way, of course, he's right. I mean, in a way, this is also the question who you point that comment towards. Because, of course, if you look at the country on the government level, that's exactly the point. As long as developed nations who have a historical duty to reduce CO2 emissions faster, as long as they're still labeling gas green, I don't wonder people in China and India say, as long as Germany still burns coal, as long as everyone is still labeling gas green, we're going to keep our coal, or we make clean coal plants. Yeah, of course, that is the answer. I don't wonder, maybe if I can, one note on Indonesia, because you're right, and the big specialty is on Indonesia, of course, that it's a big exporter, so its economy is depending on the export and not only the energy system, also to a much larger extent than, for example, South Africa.
Well, none of this dangerous coal development happens without big money behind it. You report Royal Bank of Canada, Citibank, and major public pensions continue to bankroll coal. Is there a growing list of large-scale institutions who have sworn off coal investing?
Yeah, there is. The question is rather like, it's not in all financial centers of the world, unfortunately. So we see, especially on coal, a big development in Europe. We see rather smaller steps in the U.S. still, especially when it comes on company exclusion level, and also only at first financial institutions in different Asian places like Malaysia or Singapore or the Philippines, where you see actually movement. So the biggest movement is still in Europe, and we do not see, for example, that especially when it comes to oil and gas, there is like the big front runners already. But in the coal area, we definitely can see that.
But the top four coal plant developers are all Chinese companies. Talk to us about coal in China.
In China, the coal industry is still growing. That is to say about China, it's hard to do or to change what's happening inside China from outside. What was successful was campaigns or whatever internal lobbying in China also happened on new coal plants or new coal projects outside of China. So we could see several projects which have been stopped or delayed, where, for example, the Industrial and Commercial Bank of China stepped out in Africa, for example, in Kenya or in Zambia. So we saw a success there. Inside China, and of course also the financing of Chinese coal companies can happen almost exclusively through China. Nevertheless, we do see especially investments also in Chinese coal companies. They have special financial subsidiaries. Through them, they can also derive money on other stock markets, so there is still financial flows to Chinese coal from the global north.
And when a coal power plant is built, the expectation is it will operate for about 60 years. All the new coal plants built in the next few years would be spewing carbon and pollution until 2080. At the same time, we've already crossed these irreversible climate tipping points. What really needs to happen in the coal industry?
It has to stop operating as soon as possible. I would say in Europe now, but we said that 5 years ago. We said that 10 years ago, I think, already. And I think the more we see that it's hard or that there is resistance in the global south to change their track, or in countries like India and China, however you want to classify them, on that track, it actually means in the global north we have to try harder. As said, we have this global responsibility of, or this historical responsibility of being historical, the biggest emitters, and that's why we also have to be the front runners by far on phasing out all fossil fuels, and at the beginning, or at the worst, obviously coal. And then we can, at the same time, demand the same from other nations.
Can civilization really survive without coal? Wouldn't a lot of people die without it?
Interesting question. I think I haven't been asked that so far. So far, I've been asked only by, let's say, conservative financial institutions if it wouldn't be bad for development and people would lose their jobs. In fact, it's no secret that coal mining as well as coal combustion has severe health risks for the local population. Because you talked about Africa before, I know from my own experience that in the mining regions in South Africa, the local population, the kids who grow up there, usually their lungs are so bad they can't even work in the mines. So coal kills, as the campaign Life After Coal in South Africa says, and obviously not using coal would be much better for the local health. And as well, it's no secret that the use of renewable energies and the maintenance in the renewable sector can also create a lot of jobs. The question is just how early does this country start to transition? Does a country start to transition early enough so they're not trapped in the fossil fuel trap forever?
So we've got men, mostly men, in suits proposing great big projects in corporate boardrooms around the world. And your group and your fellow colleagues help to figure out what the total is. But do we think that national leaders in Riyadh and Paris and Washington and Beijing have added it up? Do they know what is being developed here, and yet they still issue all the permits and the subsidies and the guarantees to make it happen?
Of course, I can just guess what they really know and think. The biggest share of humanity is very clear about climate change and also very clear about where it comes from. But there is lots of ways to try to steer towards wrong solutions, or of putting all money into solutions which are not the obvious and clear one. And I think people know that, and either they believe they can just still make a dime just before this world goes down, or maybe gone to Mars before it's getting bad, or they overestimate the little time we have to make a change.
I'm afraid all of that is true. So, Catherine, when you go home at night with all these figures in your head, do you think there is a way out of this mess?
Honestly, I don't know. I hope so. And I also have a little kid, and I wouldn't want to tell her I didn't try.
Absolutely, and I say the same to my own grandson. Could you please tell our listeners where they can find this useful information about the fossil fuel industry and their expansion plans?
So all our data is explained, accessible, researchable online. We have on coalexit.org the global coal exit list. You can also see our financial research on the whole global coal industry and look for a bank of your choice or investor of your choice. And we also have on Google.org, so don't confuse it with Google, it's just the acronym of Global Oil and Gas Exit List. And also here you can find, first of all, also lots of background stories on different projects, connections to other NGOs who are working on this reputation risk projects on the ground, and you can download the Excel file. In both cases, we ask for free login to just count how many people are using it. Does it make sense? Is it interesting? Does it make sense to do it again? So please log in and download our list and have a look, and you find contacts there where you can ask us all kinds of questions on that.
I will put links to the global oil and gas exit lists and coalexit.org and a lot more in my show blog at ecoshock.org. Katrin, thank you for speaking with our listeners.
Thanks for the interview.
We've been speaking with respected German environment group Urgewald and the leading energy researcher there, Katrin Ganswit.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.